what we're planning to do today. Do you need to start the work session?
Yeah, so we'll just call the Lane County Board of Commissioners work session order. And today we're discussing mental health addictions in the biennial work plan, and so.
Okay, thanks. What I wanted to, well, first, thank you for coming for the to talk about the plan today. We've done the plan for many years and haven't taken the opportunity to have a work session because in some respects it's just kind of business as usual. It's looking at our community, but a lot of the funding came from the state and it was already decided where that would go. And that changed this year. And so it really, what they're saying is you community determined where this funding should go. And as we talked last night, you know, there's a lot of need and a lot of opportunity in our community. So we wanted to make sure as we went out and got the community's input that we paused and got your intake or your input and your take on this. The other thing is, as we put the plan together and take all this, and CA and Diana, we'll talk about that, take all this community input, we'll be determining how our community wants to spend our this money. So, one, we want your input on that. Two, we want to just let you know anytime things change, and it is changing, you'll, of course, hear about that. And so we want you to understand what's going on as well as your input. So I want to thank CA and Diana who have been championing and running this plan. How many community meetings did you do?
32.
Wow.
32
wow.
Different, and they went to different places, not just call folks in. So they're going to take it away and give you a head, give you some insight on the plan.
Thank you. So what you have before you, commissioners, and it will start with this picture. This is the front. I just want to kind of provide you with a frame by which we are putting the plan together. As Alicia indicated, this year our biennial plan guidelines from the state are very different. I've been writing the plan for Health and Human Services for the last 5 or so biennia, and so I have a little history.
Could I just interrupt to say, I think because of the recording, we should mention who's here.
Okay.
So you want to do roll call?
So why don't you go ahead and just for the record, Commissioner Forrest and Erickson.
Do you guys want to start first, or do you want us to start as staff?
I'll start. I'm Faye Stewart, County
Thank
Commissioner.
You.
Okay, perfect. Sid Lightman, County Commissioner.
Pat Farr, County Commissioner.
Pete Sorensen, County Commissioner.
Alicia Hayes, Health and Human Services staff.
Karen Gaffney, Health and Human Services staff.
C.A. Baskerville, Health and Human Services staff.
Diana Avery, Health and Human Services staff.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No,
that's a good idea.
Thank you. So as I was saying, this having been kind of the scribe for this plan for the last 10 to 12 years, I can say that this is a very different process that we've been asked to do for the biennial plan. And so rather than going through all the details of the guidelines, I thought what Diana and I could do is just present to you some of the key highlights, just so that you are prepared. As Alicia said, we anticipate you may hear from some of your constituents asking about it because it is going to be very different. So we want to make sure you have all the information you need to maybe field any concerns or questions. So, and please interrupt me if you have questions along the
What's
way.
What's a hookah?
A hookah is kind of a contraption by which you smoke tobacco. Typically, you know, it's like this big thing that, and there's many.
Lawrence of Arabia kind of moment.
Lawrence of Arabia, yes. It's like kind of armed, you know.
I see it, you know,
yes.
I see the mm-hmm. thing advertised, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah. No, you're welcome. So before I go through this packet of material I presented, I do want to let you know our process. In addition, we were asked to conduct a community needs assessment specifically for mental health and addictions. As you all know, you've heard the presentation of the community health needs assessment from Trillium and Peace Health and Public Health. So that requirement for the CCO as well as Public Health and Peace Health is to do an overall community health needs assessment. What you may remember is that there wasn't a particular concentration of information in that assessment specific to mental health and addictions. So our guidelines asked that we partner with that community health needs assessment process and add what we can specific to mental health and addictions prevention through recovery. So in order to do that, we looked at what the data was currently being presented in that community health needs assessment. And then we did a few more things. We collected data, or we looked at the data that's currently being collected by the state and by local organizations that's required. So the number of people entering treatment, who they are, where they come from, their diagnosis, things like that. But then we also wanted to get an idea of what our community members believe is important. And so Diana, with the help of some of our other colleagues, convened 32 focus groups around the county in rural Lane County and urban Lane County specific outreach to certain populations to make sure that we got a diversity of voices. In addition to that, we developed a very short survey and sent that out via SurveyMonkey and received over 600 responses of that SurveyMonkey. So we, and again, we tried to reach as many people as we could, our neighbors, our colleagues.
Our mechanics.
Exactly. We really wanted to get as diverse voice as we could. So together with the quantitative data that we have this qualitative data, and to those combined, we believe we have identified what our community has in terms of priorities. Mm-hmm. We're going to, is there anything else about the process?
Any questions about the process?
You say 32 focus groups?
32 focus groups.
Over the period of
A couple of months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we wanted to go where people were. So we held a couple, like in Springfield we held an all-call, and in Florence we held an all-call. But we also wanted to go where people are meeting already. So, for instance, we held a focus group with Oregon Family Support Network's parent support group. We supported a focus group with Amigos Multicultural Services Center, Juventud Faceta youth support group. So, and we also held focus groups with ongoing advisory committees. So the Mental Health Advisory Committee, the community-based health. I learned so much, let me tell you, about what's going on in our community with clients of emergence problem gambling treatment groups. So we went where people were.
How was the attendance?
We had really good attendance. We averaged probably six people per, so we had, you know, we had triple digit participants across the focus groups.
Were you the facilitator?
I was the facilitator of some of them. Michelle Lowry helped facilitate. Leah Edelman helped facilitate. We also offered to groups, we offered them the protocol for the focus groups if they felt it would be more appropriate to have the ongoing facilitator facilitate. So closed groups, you know, they didn't particularly want us coming into their closed group, and we wanted to respect that. We hired a bilingual, bicultural staff person, we a consultant, to run some focus groups with monolingual Spanish-speaking participants.
That's deep and wide.
We tried. We wanted to get beyond that sort of usual group. So, you know, we asked people, when we sent that SurveyMonkey out, we asked people to take it and then distribute it, but not just among their staff and clients, but with their friends, and get it on their Facebook page. And so I made the comment about the mechanic. We felt we were doing a pretty good job of that outreach when somebody's mechanic said, "Hey, I just got this. What's this about?" I think it was Michelle's mechanic that contacted her to ask her what it was about. So a good indicator of breadth, not just the usual folks we access.
So you can imagine then, when we have that level of information. Hello.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's
right. No worries. But you do have to state your name and address for the record.
Okay.
Maybe not your address, just your position here.
So you can imagine, with the amount of information and data that we have, it was, we had many conversations with a variety of people, and I want to say it was not just Diana and I involved in this. We had I convened a team of people in Health and Human Services, including the behavioral health manager Teresa DeVigo and a number of other staff within behavioral health, as well as some key staff partners in youth services. Trillium was a participant. So we convened this small group of people to help us not only look at our data, but also help identify and describe the overview of our system, because we really needed to get clear. I mean, I'm certainly not an expert in all those areas. I know a little bit about it, but you know, we needed to make sure we brought in our experts. So it was a challenge to really think about how to organize it. So what I have before you on this graphic is a way in which we agreed that we need to ensure that all the needs along the continuum are being met. So this graph comes to you from the Institute of Medicine, and it is in fact used at the federal level. It's used actually at the state for their block grant money with respect to the Addictions and Mental Health Plan, etc. And so what this describes is the continuum of supports that's needed in a community if we're really going to be successful in meeting the needs. So we need to ensure that there's everything from promotion and prevention through treatment, and what is referred to here is maintenance, but it really also speaks to the need for treatment and long-term care and recovery and support. So a way to organize our data as well as our plan, we use this as a guide. So I just want to have you, I want you to have this frame, if you will. Are there any questions about this particular continuum of care? Okay. So moving on, what I presented for you is just some key data points. Again, this is not all of it, but I thought these were some of the most revealing data points. The first page you have is just the number of people that were served in our county for mental health services. And we got this data through what's called the Client Process Monitoring System, or CPMS. It's the process by which when people enter into treatment, their therapists complete a form and it's entered into the database that the state collects. So these are reports that we receive back from Addictions and Mental Health. So you can see there were over 14,000 people served in 2011 in Lane County, specific to mental health needs. Just some key things I think to highlight. You can see that in the adult system, you know, white females were the population receiving most of those services. But also in terms of our minority populations, our Latino or Hispanic females and male youth also, you know, received quite a number of services in respect to our...
What's the age break?
Under 18.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. So those are just some important data. And on the next side is, again, the number of people served for alcohol and drug treatment services. And...
Can I go back to that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because on the mental health piece, mm-hmm. In fact, it was brought up a little bit last night even, and that is the quote-unquote angry white male, young white male. Mm-hmm. So on the under 18, do you even have even a more of a breakout, like for instance on the adult male or even on the adults period, do you have maybe, is there information available to show maybe 18 to 30? Or is that, mm-hmm. or is that not, did you not get that specific? You just pretty much under 18 and then anything over 18?
Yeah, we did not okay. get that data from the state. We might be able to get that,
okay.
but...
And then the only other question I have is, I mean, when you look at the adults, the disparity between female and male,
yes.
on white female and male, mm-hmm. is, I mean, that's almost 2 to 1.
Right.
I guess I'm going to ask the question, reasons. I mean, that is... Wow, that jumped.
So some
of the reasons there.
Some of the qualitative information that we heard in groups is that there's a stigma for asking for help amongst males. And I won't speak to that. I will let you sort of think and reflect upon that. But that there really is a stigma individually and culturally. And we also have, perhaps in some cases, if I'm thinking of parenting and pregnant individuals in our community, we have a little bit of natural access to females in our community. So we can reach out and provide referral and provide support for services perhaps a little bit easier to help break down some of the barriers. But we did hear about the sort of stigma as a barrier to services, and that was some particular emphasis for males.
I guess the other piece I would add to that answer is not only perceived access, but actual access.
Mm-hmm.
This is public mental health services.
That's right.
So
right.
The fact that that women are overrepresented on the Oregon Health Plan over men is significant, too. They have access to care.
Well, and I guess if you're to break it out percentage-wise, if you look at Asian, it's 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. Very good. Thank you.
I was going to mention that I was struck by a number right at the bottom, and that is if you look on the line that says total, and you look at those five numbers, among adults, the women are coming in at a higher rate, 5,500,
mm-hmm.
compared to men. But among youth, it's just the opposite. And so if we're trying to tie together some of what we talked about last night, and several of us were there last night as well as tonight, as today, what asking a different way, what is the reason that there are more boys coming in than girls?
Well, and certainly the financial access is equal for children. So the disparity that happens on the adult side in terms of who has a medical card isn't true among kids.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't know that we...
Are these all Oregon Health Plan people?
No.
No,
it's a combination. These are just publicly funded beds. And so the plan, I should actually clarify, the plan for which we are talking about refers to non-Oregon Health Plan funds. They are the funds that come to support primarily indigent services.
Mm-hmm.
So just to bring you guys up to speed, last night there was a conversation about folks on private pay insurance not being able to access mental health services, and we had some.
Yeah, and that came out pretty loud and clear in our focus groups and in looking at referral, deeper numbers here, looking at referral source and payer source.
Right.
You know, there's some numbers to back up
those
feelings.
Yeah, so we have some
feelings.
Of that data here.
Yeah.
I just want to check the time,
right,
because
I
made a promise and I keep my promises.
Okay. So I'll just keep going then. That's okay. So if we move to A&D treatment services, you can see it's actually just the opposite in terms of who's accessing services. You can see adult males are more likely to access alcohol and drug services, and also adolescent males or youth, male youth. So it's just a little bit different.
Is any of that predicated by involvement with the justice system?
Yes.
Indeed it is. In fact, that's one of the slides, is the referral source to services. So yeah, that's a good question, Commissioner.
Yes.
So that's who's accessing services, but if we want, again, keeping that spectrum of need in mind, we need to look at people who might not be accessing treatment services, but what is the need in our community? So looking at maybe to help us target prevention services. So the next slide tells you what's happening with regards to Lane County youth. And this is the 2012 Student Wellness Survey. So this report is actually very new, and it represents the percentage of youth who used, in this particular slide, used these various substances in the last 30 days. So it's a percentage of youth. And you can see, I'll just highlight that in grades 8 and 11, Lane County youth are for all but perhaps one area higher than the state average of use, everything from tobacco and cigarettes to alcohol to illicit drugs. So Lane County youth have a slightly higher rate than the state average. And on the next page, on the back, is again the student wellness survey looks at more mental health needs. The first question is, in the last year, have you ever seriously attempted suicide? And you can see in 6th and 8th grade in Lane County, our 6th and 8th graders report a higher rate of considering suicide than the state average. So our young people, very young people in our county, are contemplating suicide. And then the second question is, have you felt so sad or hopeless for more than 2 weeks in a row that you stopped doing your usual activity? So that speaks to depression, and we know depression is the number one reason people access services. And you can see in Lane County, all of our grades, all of our youth have a higher rate than the state average. So this speaks to, again, our the need to kind of take a look at how we can target our promotion and prevention efforts. The next slide, I just tried to kind of put a few things together on one slide to give you an idea of what's happening with our 6th, 8th, and 11th graders in a variety of things. And again, this is from the Student Wellness Survey. I added things specific to guns and weapons because of a lot of the national discussion and local discussion around that, and I thought you might find it interesting. I certainly do. To note that even in 6th grade, young people report having brought a gun or a weapon to school, and also being threatened with a weapon.
What's the scale on the left side of the graph?
This is percentage.
Oh, okay.
Yep, sorry.
So like 10%, mm-hmm. more than 10% have been, or around 10% have been threatened by
yes.
weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. At school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at school.
Yeah. So again, these are things that tell us a little bit about who's accessing services and what our young people are experiencing. Getting to Commissioner Farr's question around referral source, the next page tells us how are people actually, when they need treatment or need services, where are those referrals coming from? And something I want to highlight is under alcohol and drug, clearly the majority of referrals come from the criminal justice system. Whereas when you compare that to mental health referrals, they come from other providers or from local or state agencies. And I think that this requires a much broader and bigger conversation, but as someone who's worked in the alcohol and drug field for most of my professional career, I would say that this highlights how we've criminalized addiction versus helping people know that there's, or helping reduce the stigma to accessing support. I think we've done a little bit better job around mental health. We certainly need to do a lot more, but in alcohol and drug, we wait until someone's involved with the criminal justice system before getting them the support that they need. But anyway, it's an interesting slide. And then finally, just to let you know where we fit in terms of deaths per 100,000 in our county in comparison to the state and national average, and you can see that we have higher rates of deaths related to alcohol and suicide in our county than the state or national average. So we have a lot of needs in our community. And before we move on, want to pause for a moment and see if there's any questions or comments specific to that?
How many of these questions, the previous questions for the kids that you're asking about substance mm-hmm. use in the last 30 days, how many of those questions could be standardized to the state, county, nation, and are these asked the same way in these surveys?
They are. This is a statewide survey.
Oh, okay.
So
is it done each year or?
It's done every other year.
So you have some sort of 6, 8, and 11 data.
We do somewhat. The student wellness survey began in 2008, I believe, Before that, we have the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey, which we still implement on alternate years, and we have that for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And they ask similar questions. Mm-hmm. The Oregon Healthy Survey data is a lot more comprehensive. It asks more questions around nutrition, diet, as well as substance use and some mental health issues.
Are these trends, are they getting bad? Are they improving? Are they mixed? How would you say?
Small improvement.
Yes, some improvement in some areas, but I would say still Lane County
continues to be above.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there cross tabulation on a county by county basis? That is to say, you mentioned nutrition versus let's take slide four, which is slide five, depression and contemplation of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any way to look at how nutrition perhaps on a county by county basis, because you have some differences there, and also economic vitality of a particular area, as you know, income or joblessness rate. I'd be interested to see how those two things in particular, nutrition and economics, affect. In particular, that one slide, which to me is one of the most telling numbers, the
depression
slide. Because depression causes many of the other things that we're looking at.
So what we have, I mean, certainly in the community health needs assessment, we do have Lane County's rate of obesity and, you know, chronic disease, and we can talk about our income and poverty levels and things. What this student wellness survey does not do is track individual responses. So it's not, a student completing the survey is anonymous. So we don't track if that particular student answering the questions on that day is living in poverty or has other things.
Is it broken down geographically more tightly than the county?
It is.
For instance, we have very accurate numbers on free and reduced lunch.
Right, high school district,
On a grade school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, every school that participates in the survey owns their survey data. So what is useful is, but I don't have access to that data unless the principal or superintendent would like to make it available. But let's say, for example, Cottage Grove High School looks at their survey data, they can also see the county survey and see how they compare to the county and to the state, giving that community additional information to know how they might be able to target some strategies.
Is it down to the school district or is it
down
to the
school?
Building?
The
down
school.
To the building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Excellent. Okay, that'd be very interesting to look at, but we can only access that through the school district.
Right,
that's
they,
right.
Yeah.
I think a follow-up on Pat's question as well, because he was touching on the economy side of things,
mm-hmm.
and I go back to that, the editorial, I think it was from last Sunday, The Tale of Two Oregons,
mm-hmm.
and I like to point out Washington County in particular, because Washington County's median income is almost $20,000 a year more than Lane County. So they've seen a rise in median income, a rise, and so it'd be interesting to find out, you know, on numbers like this related to what's going on in Washington County compared to what's going on in Lane County, because our median income has actually dropped, I think, $3,000 a year in the last 8 or 9 years here in Lane County, so in this last decade for the most part. So it'd be interesting to kind of correlate what do those numbers look like in areas where the economy continues to, or looks to thrive, comparatively speaking. I will say that what happened in Newtown and the, because obviously mental health played a significant role, and we are finding out that was not typical. And when you look at the community itself, because I was breaking out the numbers, I mean, the typical value of a home there is almost $500,000. The family median income is six figures. That did not that did not go into any sort of typical anything.
Right.
I think where you almost have this expectation this feeling of.
Yeah. So, I think when we look at those really high-profile, major impact, major traumatic impact events like school shootings and community shootings, if we look at the shooters, we do see a different profile than some of the information we're presenting around our community wellness as a whole. So clearly what we heard in the focus groups and we see in our referral and our payee or a payer data, we talked about it a bit last night at the commission meeting, is private insurance does not necessarily mean that a young person or a family member is going to be able to get the meaningful, relevant support they need around their ongoing stressors and their ongoing mental health or addictions issues.
You know, and to tag along with Commissioner Lankin, I'm looking at Washington County versus Lane mm-hmm. County. You get an overall picture of the county, but even within Washington County, and even within Lane County, drilling down specifically
yes.
to
yes.
the grade school level,
yeah.
which really reflects the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get the closest data to that. And while shooters are an anomaly, yep. depression's not an
that's
anomaly.
No.
That's
and
right.
it's an ongoing issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
So I want to ask a quick question, and that is, in the approximately 18 more minutes that we have, what policy changes should we be looking at when we've looked at all these numbers? In other words, you've given us data.
Yep.
What policy issues, if at all, are involved in this?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. So that'll move us into the priorities. I think the thing I ask of you is to remember to keep the big picture in mind as we go through this. In the guidelines for this biennium, so we're talking about the 2013-2015 biennium, that there's a shift that is occurring in terms of our funding allocations. Traditionally, Lane County Health and Human Services receives an agreement from the state specifically to provide services in mental health and addictions, and there are dedicated or directed dollars to support specific services. This biennium plan begins to shift that. So for this biennium, approximately about half of the funds are now moving into what's called flexible funds, giving the county the opportunity to shift funds where necessary to meet the needs and priorities of the community based on the data that's presented. So that's the big shift and big policy opportunities, I think, for us, is to really reflect supporting services based on what our community data tells us. So based on the quantitative and qualitative data and a lot of discussion and analysis among that team of people, we've identified three high-level priorities that I've presented here to you. We've organized them by these three priorities. Sorry, I just skipped the next couple things, but those are reflective of our focus groups. So we'll give you a little bit more information. But moving to the priorities, the first one is we consider it access. We label it access in terms of it covers a variety of things. And if you go back and look at what our focus groups and survey tells us, you'll see that these things are reflected. Essentially, we say that there's challenges with accessing services in part because people are not aware of services. In particular, they're not aware of promotion and prevention efforts or activities or strategies that may be present. There's also access just in terms of meeting the needs of specific populations, whether it's language or targeting particular groups like LGBTQ populations, veterans, by age, etc. But also there's a challenge with access specific to location. There are some communities, focus group was done in Oak Ridge, that they don't even have some of the services available. So there are some of our rural areas that don't have service, or if they do, it's 1 or 2 hours a week. And so for many communities where they don't have services, they're trying to look at transportation to the urban area to access services, but then even transportation may not be available, at the time the service is offered in the urban area, or there's a challenge with getting everyone that needs transportation to the service. A classic example is when, let's say, someone is needing transportation that has a developmental disability, they have transportation, their caregivers also able to ride on
the formal caregiver
formal caregiver is able to ride along with that person. However, if the caregiver is a parent, or if the or even if it's a formal caregiver is the parent, but the but they also have a young child at home, the parent would be able to ride with the person, but the child, the younger child, would not be able to get a ride. So therefore, it creates a child care issue, etc. So it just compounds it. So transportation, location, specific population needs, or even being aware of certain services. So we categorize that as access. The second priority is we organize it under transitions. So transitions for people exiting residential, hospitalization, inpatient, or incarceration. So when people leave those particular treatments and move back into the community, there's limited support helping them transition and making a smooth transition back into our community. There's also a challenge with people moving from one system to another, whether that be from the adolescent system to an adult system, in the case perhaps of mental health when they need long-term care, or maybe transition if they've met their needs in one particular area, maybe they've become clean and sober, but they need ongoing support with mental health issues, and that sometimes that transition to other systems can be a challenge, in part because it moves into our third priority, which is coordination and communication.
The question on transition, does that include transition from active military service to civilian life?
Yes, absolutely. We did some focus groups with veterans and, and families, and that's a huge, huge need. Yeah, there's a whole other, I mean, it's just a giant need, in part because we don't ask about veteran status, so it's a big issue. And then when we talk about communication and coordination, there was a lot of feedback about people who need supports, maybe in multiple systems, that they experience a what feels like a lack of coordination among those systems, that they're having to repeat themselves frequently when they go from system to system, and that would be nice and to coordinate those things. That there's also an experience even on the prevention end of things being very siloed, so some people might be very interested in being involved or supporting child abuse prevention, but that's very separate than perhaps what's happening with substance abuse prevention, and yet it's the same people in a small community who come together and they're wondering, why are we not all talking together, and can't we just pool our funding and try to do something together? So even in prevention, it feels very separate and siloed. And then there's also issues around coordinating between systems, in particular DD coordinators. And I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure, I think when we talk about people that are involved with services in across systems, mental health, substance abuse, and developmental disabilities, those systems in terms of communication, in terms of payment, in terms of the rules and regulations and sort of the culture of those systems, they don't work well together. A prime example is an individual with a developmental disability may need their caregiver to help make those appointments. In the mental health and the addictions world and some of the other treatment worlds, the individual has to be the one that calls and makes that appointment and sets those up, and that doesn't work. So there's just those cultures and those habits that continue to need to be addressed and broken down.
So those are our three main priorities. You can see there's a lot to fall under those priorities. And I just added, sorry, it's a little messed up here, but I just wanted to add the last page, which is the community health priorities. These are what were identified in our community health needs assessment as priorities. And you can see that mental health, substance abuse, were identified in our overall community health needs assessment. So we have a lot of work to do.
The answer to my question about the policy? Is, well, where are we going to get the money for tobacco, obesity, dental care, mental health, substance abuse? Is that?
Well, I don't know if it answers your question directly, but I think this gives you a lot more information to say that these really are priorities in our community, and we really do need to pay attention to them. What specifically to these funds, what I will say is, again, I've said that some of these funds are moving into flexible dollars. What we may be proposing, and we haven't talked about that, but what we may be proposing is, in order to meet some of these priorities, is to shift some of our allocation to different areas. Not to destabilize our system, but in order to address these things, we may need to say we need to provide mental health treatment more often in Oak Ridge, for example, or in rural areas, or something. So just to let you know that there will be that discussion internally about how we may need to shift those. And that, so again, not to destabilize the system, but we have to think about how to meet the needs of all these populations.
So in CA, do we have a date yet for, in February, bringing the plan? Right, what is that date?
I don't have that date yet from Katie, but I believe it might be February 22nd or something.
So Commissioner, in February, we're going to bring you the first policy choice, which is going to be related to how do you allocate these funds that come to the county from the state in support of these. And then I think there, and I know you're short on time today, but there are a host of other policy options, some that cost money, some that don't, to be able to address some of these needs.
Thanks,
Tom. So this seems like it's an assessment for the entire county, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the ability, or maybe you've already done it, take for instance South Lane Mental Health and Cottage Grove.
Mm-hmm.
Can you assess how well or they're doing with meeting the needs of the community,
mm-hmm.
and what might need to take place to enhance the needs there? Because it's obviously going to be way different than Oak Ridge, who has,
mm-hmm.
like you said, somebody operating out of their house a couple hours a week,
right.
Which is certainly can't be meeting the needs, but, you know, in my latest tour of South Lane Mental Health, they're starting a program for domestic violence offenders, generally the males, trying to get them the help so that they don't repeat the actions. So they're constantly trying to meet the needs in the community. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe we don't need to spend as much time in Cottage Grove because they do have a really good program and model, and we try to focus in other areas.
Yeah.
We can be that strategic with this.
Yes.
Yes.
Short answer is yes.
Yes. The thing I did not present is what's also new for our guidelines is very specific outcome measures and performance measures that are being asked. Years past, we did not ask for performance outcomes from our providers specifically. So we will include it in. So, for example, we may put out a RFP for rural mental health services, but we will include some specific outcome measures that need to be met. So to answer your question, previously I don't know that we could drill down to look at South Lane Mental Health's performance. We might be able to look at certain programs if they've done some specific evaluation around some of their strategies, but in the future we will be able to.
And usage and referral and
mm-hmm.
information.
And just one further question I had was, you know, from a perception side of things, you know, being here for 8 years, it seems to me like, you know, we've cut mental health services in a lot of areas, whether it's in the jail or other places. Do I have the wrong perception that we have cut those services and we have less services today than we did 8 years ago, or am I operating on kind of a false sense that, yeah, there's areas that we're not performing mental health, but we have actually, in the bigger picture, been able to support more people and help more people.
Do you want
to go ahead and take that?
Yes and no. Yes, certainly we have, the mental health system has experienced reductions here, direct reductions of the general fund, so there's no county general fund that goes to mental health services anymore. And also reductions at the state level due to the reductions in the state budget in general. I'm hopeful the governor's proposed budget includes increased resources for community mental health. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to rebuild some of those
mm-hmm.
services. And on the access side, as the Medicaid expansion happens and more people have coverage, that hopefully will also provide more payers, which will then support more providers in those communities. But yes, there has been a reduction And I'm hoping we're starting to turn the corner.
Okay, well, I just want to make sure my perception was correct.
Thanks. You know, CA, you mentioned something on the priorities, number three, communication and coordination. By the way, your priorities are really decent, really nicely outlined and very direct and to the point. Communication and coordination is something that comes up all the time. You mentioned there's the coordination and communication between systems. A quote you said, why aren't we talking together? The prevention end can be siloed.
Yes.
And we see that not just in mental health services, but we see the siloing and the lack of communication. We saw it in food. Food for Lane County does a very good job of overcoming that on a countywide basis, but not very many other services are getting past the siloing. And not to dig too deep into that right now, but you point out something that's really something when we talk about more money for services, one of the things that we can do is get cut through that siloing and cut through the communication barriers that we have and make sure that we're not duplicating services or providing competing or conflicting services.
Martin, I appreciate you bringing that up, and it is a huge issue, and it's particularly in prevention where there's little teeny tiny bits of money. We cannot afford to compete or be siloed. We really need to do a better job of
consolidating.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up on the comment about spending or cutting at the state level and at the county level for mental health. First of all, how difficult would it be to shoot us an email to tell us the state money and the local money for mental health? Just
Current or proposed for?
No, not the proposed, but just looking at it. Commissioner Stewart asked about over his 8 years, is it fair to say we've lost these services, gained these services, more money spent, less money spent? And you said, well, there's been budget cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to drill down to whether that is, in fact, fewer USD, you know, dollars that has been appropriated by the state for mental health services, and that the county has expended fewer dollars, as opposed to each year it costs us more money to provide those services, so we're providing fewer services, but it's costing us more money to provide fewer service.
So
I wanted
you'd like to see the dollars and
yeah,
the service.
Yeah, to drill down, because the way the impression I was left after that exchange was fewer dollars have been appropriated by the state for mental health, and Lane County has spent fewer dollars on mental health. And I wanted to make sure before I, you know, put that out, that was accurate.
That's a good clarification, because Lane County General Fund was specifically the county money that
mm-hmm.
I've talked about, and certainly inside of our department, we've leveraged the community health centers to try and bring in federal
mm-hmm.
dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Lane County has spent less. I will find that
yeah.
out. Certainly the general fund
but
has
at least
less.
That way when we're talking with the legislators and we say, hey, you know, not enough money is being spent on something that is a severe problem, and these shootings and this depression and these sixth graders talking about 20% of them have been, you know, sad for more than 2 weeks. All of that points to a lack of resources, but I wanted to be clear that it's not just a function of it costs us more money to provide fewer resources, which is often the case when people in government are asked, well, what's the picture? Oh, it's budget cuts.
Yeah, we can certainly get you that. And I guess the other piece I would put out there as we think about policies moving forward, we're spending a lot of money on mental health in this community, money that could be spent on education, on roads. If we can get people healthier and invest in that prevention piece, that would be my hope, is that we actually get to a place where we can spend less money because there's less need. And so that's, I'm hoping as we bring this plan forward and policy recommendations down the line, we can start to turn that corner too.
And prevention is silent.
Well, there's no money that is dedicated in mental health for prevention.
But,
yeah.
So I just want to be aware of the time, because I know Commissioner Stewart wants time.
At least you made a promise.
I made a promise, that's right.
I think I had one last question.
Well, and Karen, I appreciate that, but my hopes that we'll be in that position is not going to be real soon. And I say that because, I mean, I got two people right here that have called me yesterday that, you know, clearly probably could use some mental health issues. And it's all stemming around whether it's relationships with their neighbors that have been driven to the brink of anxiety problems to I'm about into bankruptcy. I don't know how I'm going to pay for things. So, you know, currently right now with the conditions and the climate in our communities, I'm sensing that we're probably a long ways away, but I think it's ambitious. And the last question I had is, are you able to check the overlap? I have a family member that has mental health issues, and this person is now being treated by their regular physician. Are you able to track the people that are with their regular physicians that are being treated by that physician for mental health issues too?
In terms
or does
of
it
tracking
have to be
them,
in the mental health system?
The data that's here is largely about people in the publicly funded system. On the other side, though, that's the coordination of care issue, which is huge, that's being talked about with Trillium and CCOs and statewide health care reform is, yes, we have to make those connections better so that we have a patient-centered medical home where someone is actually quarterbacking the care on that person and making sure that it's the right care at the right level at the right time.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Anything else? Very good.
Thank you very much for your time.
You.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You need to close the meeting
now. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you so much.